This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. An argument has raged for a long, long time about the benefits of single-sex education. And now, that argument is coming back to Massachusetts. Boston, of course, is home to some very well-respected all-girls and all-boys private schools, like Roxbury Latin and the Windsor School. But current law prohibits single-sex public schools.
But now Boston Mayor Tom Menino and Boston School Superintendent Carol Johnson are pushing to change that. And just last week, the Beacon Hill lawmakers gave initial approval on legislation that would permit single-sex public schools in the Commonwealth.
Proponents say single-sex education allows boys and girls to avoid distractions and is more conducive to learning. Some say boys and girls learn differently because we're socialized differently.
For example, I'm a boy, so I'm louder, I'm more aggressive, and I need to learn in ways that are more physical.
Whereas girls like me are quieter.
Really?
More reserved.
Hmm.
And we're better at sitting still and following. I can't say this. We're better at sitting still and following directions, so we do better. If we can learn in an atmosphere that fosters that, I'm only laughing because that's the last way I'd describe myself.
Well, that's the theory anyway. So we're going to explore two views on this issue. First, joining us from New York with a case for single education is Rosemary Salamone. She's the Kenneth Wang Professor of Law at St. John's University and author of Same, Different, Equal, Rethinking Single-Sex Schooling. And Rosemary Salamone, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Well, great to be there.
Also with us here in the studio is Rosalind Barnett. She's a senior scientist at the Women's Research Center at Brandeis University. And she has some questions about some of the assumptions about single-sex education. And she's co-author of The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. Rosalind Barnett, welcome back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Nice to be here.
So, Rosemary Salamone, let me start with you. You've taken a close look at single-sex public schooling in New York City, and you've seen some pretty spectacular results. Tell us something about that.
Well, first, I'd like to qualify my support for single-sex schooling. I think Professor Barnett and I would agree about the problematic gender stereotypes that have been promoted by some single-sex classes in co-ed schools in particular. So I'll qualify that.
Sure.
And mine has always been a rather nuanced position. I do support single-sex schooling. I do believe that they conform with law. If they can avoid the kind of archaic stereotypes that some of these programs have fallen into. And in New York, we have some exemplary single-sex schools for boys and girls, dating back from 1996, and some that have been established subsequent to that. And we've seen some remarkable success, particularly with inner-city minority students.
And so what have you seen? Or tell us a little bit about how these programs, these schools are set up, and tell us what you've seen.
Well, first of all, I have not seen the stereotypes that are talked about in some other programs. What these schools really try to do is to build self-esteem in these students and to encourage them to attach their self-esteem to academic success. School becomes a very defined academic program for them. The social is kept outside, and these students walk into the school with very high expectations from the school officials and for themselves. For the boys, for example, at the Eagle Academy in the Bronx, they have very positive male role models that they wouldn't have in their community from the principal on down, yet they also have female teachers in the school as well. And the same goes for the girls in the Young Women's Leadership School in East Harlem, where they are, it just is a very strong academic environment for these students, and it removes the social distractions of the other sex.
So it removes the social distractions. But one more question before I bring Rosalind Barnett in, and that is, are the good results at a school like the Eagle Academy in the Bronx, I mean, is it due to the fact that there is single-sex education there in the classroom, or is it the result of devoted teachers, good classes, and extended school days, all those things that make for good schools?
And I know there is that argument that a well-run co-ed school could achieve the same results. I'm not sure, and we don't know, and the evidence is inconclusive.
Hmm.
What we do know is that these schools are achieving incredible success, unthinkable success, with a population of very disadvantaged children. And what we really do need are some better controlled studies to determine whether you can achieve the same outcomes in a co-ed school. But unless and until we have the results of those studies, these schools should continue.
Listeners, we're talking about the pros and cons of single-sex public education, which could be coming to Boston. Were you educated in an all-boys or an all-girls school? And if so, how did it work out? Do you think that having the option of single-sex education, public education, is part of making public schools in Boston better? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment at radioboston.org and find us on Twitter and Facebook at Radio Boston. Rosalind Barnett from Brandeis, let me come to you. What's your biggest concern about the current move in Boston and elsewhere towards single-sex education?
I guess my main concern is that the rationale for establishing these schools rests heavily on stereotypes about boys and girls, whether it's their activity level, their learning styles, their brain differences. These are non-scientifically based assumptions that are used to justify or rationalize a need for separate education. And it really institutionalizes these stereotypes to the disadvantage of both boys and girls.
So what kind of stereotypes are you talking about in particular?
That girls do better in small groups, cooperative learning, quiet classrooms, where boys are more active learners. They do better when they're moving around. They have a lot of encouraging physical activity, and that's their learning style. And then because they're so different, they need to be separated. They're terribly big problems. First of all, the data don't support those assumptions. And girls, in fact, do well in physically active environments. So if you create environment that's supposedly a boy-oriented environment that has these physical components but girls don't, you disadvantage girls. Secondly, the notion, the simple notion that you can talk about boys' learning styles and girls' learning styles is fallacious at the start. There's a tremendous variation within gender on any of the dimensions that we're talking about. So we can't say there's something that's a boy thing. Boys vary all over the place. And if anything, there's enormous overlap between the genders when it comes to cognitive ability or learning styles. So the point of separating kids is if they were homogeneous, all boys are this way and all girls are that way, is a distortion.
Mm. Well, let me ask you, Rosemary Salamone was talking about eliminating the distraction. And sort of let me give you sort of a personal anecdote, which I'm sure a lot of listeners can share. I mean, anyone with a teenage daughter, and I count myself among that group of people, understands how co-ed education at a certain point can lead to major distractions in school. So isn't there an argument to be made that kids can get a better education at a certain point if they're spared that intense social dynamic of boyfriends and girlfriends and crushes and heartache and all that drama?
Well, it sounds good and it convinces a lot of people, but again, it's anecdotal. When this has been looked at more intensely, looking at all-girls schools, there's no lack of competition. Who's the prettiest? Who's wearing the best clothes? You know, who's this and who's that? So the competitiveness within gendered schools isn't any different particularly. And also, there have been some pretty good studies. Now, I agree that more is to be done, but I must say the research coming in now is much more sophisticated than it had been. And I haven't yet to see one study that shows that there are either academic or behavioral outcomes that suggest that single-sex education is better than co-education.
Mm. Rosemary Salamone, are there any studies that have proven this, or are we just talking about very persuasive and compelling anecdotal evidence at this point?
The problem is we have a very short history of this new reincarnation of single-sex schooling in this country. You know, put aside the old single-sex schools. But we have a very short history. And so we don't have the controlled studies that we'd like. Most of the studies have come from other countries like England and New Zealand and Australia that have a higher concentration of single-sex schooling. And there are some studies that have shown some positive benefits from it, and there are some studies that have not shown positive benefits. And so I don't think we can conclusive. I have not seen any studies for the argument that single-sex schooling is harmful to students. When you look at some of those studies that have been relied upon, there are serious methodological flaws in them. You know, studying students, looking at children for a two-week period, for example, or looking at a small sample of 28 students. Any scientist will tell you that's very flimsy methodology. And so the best we can say about this debate is that it's inconclusive. And I really take exception to the opponents of single-sex schooling who present it as a given, in an absolutist way, that these schools are either harmful to children or that there is no evidence to prove or to even suggest that they can be beneficial.
Let me pick up one point upon which I think you both agree. Over the past few years, actually going quite a ways back, we've had these studies and these reports about brain science that tells us that boys and girls actually learn differently. Can we dispense completely with that idea? Let me start with you, Rosalind Barnett.
Yes, I think we can dispense with that. This literature has been reviewed very competently by a number of people, including Lise Elliott at Chicago Medical School in her book, Pink Brain, Blue Brain. She is a neuroscientist herself and has reviewed hundreds of studies. And her conclusion is that there are no important brain differences between boys and girls, certainly nothing that would justify separating them on the basis of sex.
And Rosemary Solomon, do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, what we see here is a large leap in reasoning between what might be very minor differences at birth between boys and girls and teaching styles and learning styles. There are huge gaps in that mode of analysis. And what they do project and they do convey to students, these very harmful sex stereotypes of hardwired differences between boys and girls. To me, it's very dangerous.
Let's take some calls. Listeners, you can join this conversation. We're talking about the pros and cons of single-sex education as the Massachusetts legislature has taken moves to actually pass legislation that could make single-sex public education a reality in Boston one day soon. The mayor supports it, so does Superintendent Carol Johnson. 800-423-TALK, that's 800-423-8255. Let's go to Laura, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
You're on the air. Tell us what you're thinking.
Sure. So I actually went to an all-girls school, private, of course, from 6th grade to 12th grade, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I hated it being in there at the time, but it was because, you know, I was thinking about boys. I wanted to see boys and whatever it was. And I really feel like it was good that I wasn't in a co-ed environment because of that distraction. I was around a lot of other girls, and it was very competitive in terms of education. You know, I was always trying to get the best test score. I was always trying to have the best paper, get, you know, the number one prize for science fair, et cetera. And so I really liked it in that sense. And I think it also, too, it was just a very empowering environment for a woman to, and I think it was also particularly the school that I went to, it definitely focused on women's achievement and capabilities and
Laura, it's a great point, and I'm glad you called in with it, and I'm glad you had that great experience. Rosalind Barnett, let me come to you. Laura's talking about, this is a theme that I remember as long ago as 10 years ago or so, I reported a story on NPR on the pros and cons of single-sex education. I remember going over to the Windsor School, which is a terrific school, private, of course, but I to this day, I recall this 10th grader who I spoke to, and she said, you know, before I got here, I was quiet. I sat in the back of the classroom. I let the boys do all the talking. I felt that sort of where I belonged. And she was sort of given this shot of confidence to find her voice, which she claimed that she would not have found had it not been for an all-girls school.
Well, I think that's a powerful anecdote. I think that also kids who are in coeducational environments, who have teachers who are sensitive to the quiet child in the class, whether it's a girl or a boy, can bring that child out. And I think that those schools, the Windsor School or even the Harlem School, these schools are so different than most other schools in every dimension. And when people have gone in and they have done work to control for the factors other than sex composition, like the teacher ratios, teacher commitment, parent involvement, and so forth, they don't find any differences in outcomes, whether they're academic or behavioral, between special single-sex schools and others. So it's hard to compare because you're picking schools that are so resourced, so heavily resourced, that kids just have every advantage.
Let's take a call from Nick, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very
My
well, thanks.
My point is very short and sweet. I went to an all-boys school for the whole education I had in Iran, and I need to tell you that it was the most horrible experience because all boys, all the kids at school, what they did was just kept talking about the relationship with girls and they couldn't wait for school to be over so that they go to the all-girls school to meet girls.
Sure. So
the distraction is there anyway. That's all I'm trying to say.
Nick, okay, well, it's a great point. Rosemary Salamone, what do you say to Nick? I mean, there's a concern. We were talking about the distraction of co-ed education. Nick's talking about the distraction of being in that environment where it's not possible to sit next to a girl or a girl next to a boy.
You know, it really depends upon the way the school is run. There could be well-run single-sex schools and poorly run single-sex schools, and there are both out there. And this is really in response to your first caller.
Sure.
I, too, attended an all-girls high school and had attended co-educational schools up till that point. And I honestly agree with the caller that, for me, the choice was either I'd be popular or I'd be smart in a co-ed environment. And as soon as I went to a very academically challenging, competitive, all-girls school, that choice disappeared for me. I could be both. Everybody, you know, you were appreciated for what you were. And you didn't have to be worried about whether the boys liked you or not because they were outside of those doors. What I often say to single-sex schools, though, is they should not make separation isolation, that they really need to partner up with a school of the other sex, and so that boys and girls can come together, not just for social events, but for academic practices as well, so that they could come to appreciate each other for what they really are. And these schools typically do partner up with a school of the opposite sex.
Rosalind Barnett.
Well, I guess I'm the only one who went to a co-ed public high school. So here we go. I was a top student, and I was very popular. And I had no conflicts like that at all. I had male friends. I was in the head of the science club. I was a math and physics major. I had no problems whatsoever in that regard.
But if we're still sort of trying to figure out and amass all that empirical data to really figure out if this truly is a good idea or not, in the meantime, Rosalind Barnett, what's the danger of pushing forward with this?
Well, a couple of things. For one thing, we're in a time of limited educational resources, dollars. Setting up a co-educational and a single-sex option, which you have to have both, becomes very pricey. And since there's no rationale in the literature, no scientific evidence-based data to support this, it's questionable that's a good use of our dollars. Secondly, as a bigger point I would like to make, one is that in education, for the last X years, we've been moving toward diversity in our classrooms. We value racial diversity, socioeconomic diversity, all kinds of diversity. Why, in that environment, we now look for sex-segregated, single-sex, homogeneous classrooms? Let's imagine for a minute that boys and girls really do learn differently. There's something about their learning that's quite different. Why wouldn't the argument be that you'd want then to put them together so that girls would learn how boys learn and boys would value gain from how girls learn? Why wouldn't that be the argument for heterogeneity? Where is the argument? What is the justification for homogeneity?
Well, Rosemary Salamone, let me come to you with that. And I know that you've looked at this issue and had a lot to do with it. We've come a long way since the passage of Title IX, which helped to equalize educational opportunity between boys and girls. Does single-sex education run the risk of undermining the progress we've made on that issue?
There's always a danger when you start making sex such a salient feature within schooling. And I think that's the problem with the single-sex classes as compared to the single-sex schools, because in the single-sex classes, students are reminded on a daily basis that they're being separated for math or being separated for foreign languages or whatever. And school officials have to really navigate that fine divide between sex equity and sex stereotyping, which doesn't mean that it cannot be done. But getting back to the argument that it's costly, in a city like New York or Boston, where you have many schools, I don't think it costs any more to run schools, you know, a school that's single-sex side by side to a school that's co-ed, and to try to, in similar populations, and try to determine what might be the benefits of each. I don't think it's really a cost factor. And I believe that most schools should be co-ed, that should be the norm. What I'm arguing is that there should be a choice for some parents and some students who would prefer single-sex schooling. It's a choice that's made available certainly for more privileged students. And why not, particularly for inner-city minority students, where we have failed so miserably with, you know, decades of federal money coming into these neighborhoods, and we still see that academic achievement gap, why not give this an opportunity?
Rosalind, I want to let you back into the conversation. I do want to get to some callers, but please respond to what Rosemary Salomon said.
There's a brand new study that came out February 2012 by the director of NYU's Metropolitan Center for Urban Education. He's a professor, Pedro Nogueira, and he did a study just of this issue of inner-city boys and do they benefit by being separated by sex. And it's a long study, but I'm not going to do all of it, except his conclusion is there's no research support for the notion that separating young men is the best way to meet their academic and social needs. So I think we have a lot of these things we say quickly. Oh, yeah, urban boys will benefit. Some boys will benefit. We don't know what that means. And the data that we have available to us doesn't point to groups that will, in fact, benefit.
Let's try to get a couple more calls in. Nancy's calling from Melrose. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi. I am a graduate of Girls Latin School, Boston Public School, single sex, for 6 years of school, and I'm in the class of 1964. I do not approve of single sex education. I felt that I emerged from that experience socially retarded. I did not know how to speak to boys or men. I didn't know how to interact. And when I was fortunate enough to have two daughters who are now in their 30s, I would never have considered single-sex education for them.
Okay, Nancy. Well, thanks for that call. Let's take I want to take that on board and put it to our guests, but let me try to get one more call from Michael, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I went to Hamden City, which is an all-male college in Virginia, and granted, it's different being in college, but the argument that the cost difference to me is that I did some substitute teaching at my old high school in Florida, and I felt that, you know, I spent a lot of time, even though it was a private school, interacting with the students, mainly to calm them down a lot of times in high school level, get girls and boys interacting in a way inside the classroom, that I know that friends of mine with the public school said the same thing, that they spend most of their day, working to calm the girls down, calm the boys down. And when it is segregated in the sexes, at times it can be easier and cost less in the long run because you do discipline boys and girls differently. They react differently, and I just feel that it should be an option. I think your board says, panel says that it's an offering to wealthy people. It should be an offering to disadvantaged people as well for public schools.
Michael, thanks so much for the call. Rosemary Salomon, let me take you back to Nancy from Melrose and just talking about, leaving a single-sex education environment and feeling socially retarded, as she put it.
We have to really make the distinction between those old-time single-sex schools that had a particular perspective on education and this new crop, this new incarnation of single-sex schooling, which is really designed to empower these young women and empower these young men. The focus is totally different, and it's really hard to understand what they do and how well they do it unless you've spent some time in those schools and talking to teachers and parents and students. You get a real palpable feeling for what these schools are achieving. And some of it perhaps is not easily quantifiable. It's not just coming out in terms of academic outcomes and test scores or what percentage are going on to college, which is a very high percent, but what it's doing to the attitudes and self-esteem of these students, what it does to the boys at the Eagle Academy in terms of their sense of what it means to be a black male in our society, or to the girls at the Young Women's Leadership School, what it means to be a Latina in our society. Those are outcomes that are just not measurable.
Well, a final word from you, Rosalind Barnett. 40 years ago, when we were fighting for Title IX, it was all about educational equality. Now comes this debate about single-sex education. Boston is pushing for that right now. Other cities have already done it. Where are we headed, and where's the balance, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, this issue comes around each time we have better and better data, all showing that there are no advantages to single-sex education, yet it keeps coming up as if none of this research ever took place. In fact, Dr. Salome suggested there's no research. Back in the 1990s, then-Governor Pete Wilson in California established six all-girl and all-boy academies, no positive effects. So we have a lot of research.
Rosalyn Barnett, co-author of The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. She's also a senior scientist at the Women's Research Center at Brandeis University. Thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. And Rosemary Salamone, author of Same, Different, Equal, Rethinking Single-Sex Schooling. She's the Kenneth Wang Professor of Law at St. John's University in New York. Rosemary Salamone, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And listeners, the conversation continues at RadioBoston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, a visit to Olin College in Needham, where the goal is to rebuild engineering education from the ground up. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Trakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.